we sent him an email. We said, hey, just wanted to blah, blah, blah. Like, you know, if you read the Milk Road and you like it, like, just respond with like, whatever. Hello. You know, just,
tell me where you're like, hey, you're a subscriber to the Milk Road. Where do you live?
Guess how many replies we got?
I have no idea.
I think we literally got three replies.
Out of and how many sends?
There was maybe like, I don't know, I want to say like 20,000 or something like that. Like
20,000 and three replied? Yeah. I feel like I can rule the world. I know I could be what I want to.
I put my all in it like no days off. On a road less trouble, never looking back. Dude, according to the YouTube data, by the end of this sentence, half the audience will have dropped off. That's how content goes nowadays. You have like 4.2 seconds to hook everybody.
Is that true? Is it really that short? I thought
I'm
like...
I'm just joking, but it is like that. I mean, like after somebody clicks play... You just see the curve start to go Space Mountain downwards, and then it flattens out. But
are you looking at the data? Like I rarely log in.
You just let it flash the camera in the first 5 seconds every time. So there we go.
You know how like there's a joke about news anchors wearing like shorts. With me, it's the sleeveless t-shirt. I'm going jacket, sleeveless tee, baby. How's that for flashing?
I mean, I don't even know what you're prepared for. You're like, I can go outside, it can rain, I can become a doctor for a minute, I can work out, I can climb a mountain.
It's success. It's 107 degrees in Austin today, and so I'm either shirtless or sleeveless tee most of the time. When I record, I gotta put the jacket on so I look a little professional.
Dude, I've been trying to convince Ben to move to California from Austin.
And I originally pegged it at a 15% chance. What's it at now?
Oh, I think we're like up to 50. I think we've made serious headway. Now, I put in all this work. What I needed to do was just wait for summer. Just smoke them out, right? All I had to do was just smoke them out. I don't know if I ever told you this. I once was doing a deal that required us to negotiate with a company called PetroChina. PetroChina is basically like ExxonMobil, but it's owned by the government in China. And so we go to this, and they're like a huge company, but it's owned by the government, so nobody knows how much it's worth, all that stuff. But it's mega powerful oil and gas company in China. So we go, and we're supposed to negotiate this deal. And I kid you not, they did the opposite of smoking us out or sweating us out. They just froze us out. They put us in a room that was like just cold as hell. And there was no way out. Like, first getting to the room was like a 20-minute walk, like a passage, like going through this labyrinth of doors. And we get to this room, we're in. They're like, they'll be with you soon. And then they leave. And 7 hours pass, and we're sitting in this room. And I'm like, hey, I think they forgot about us. And we got to go talk to somebody. And then I tried to stand up, and immediately an arm like puts me back in the chair. They're like, no. This is part of doing business here.
To freeze you?
Just to make it uncomfortable. And they were like, you show no weakness here. We just sit.
There's this urban myth. I don't know if it's true or not, where Steve Cohen, you know, one of the guys who apparently is based off of Billions character is based off of him. Steve Cohen, rich guy, owns the Mets, where the reason why Patagonia vests are popular on Wall Street is he used to make his office freezing. So when the SEC regulators would come in, they were really uncomfortable and everyone knew.
They didn't want to stay.
Yeah, they didn't want to stay. But so apparently it works.
Dude, I mean, my Costco has a walk-in freezer where you go get like our walk-in fridge, but it's a room. It's a giant room where you go get vegetables. That thing is so uncomfortable. I mean, it's like whatever's the nearest vegetable, that's all I'm getting. And then I'm getting out of there. So I definitely believe it. If I was the SEC, I would get the fuck out of there.
I forgot to ask you this. So in right now, so basically in 2017, I wrote this ad for The Hustle, and it was, my boss thinks I'm smart, parentheses, I'm not. It's because I read The Hustle and he has no idea that it exists, dash, a reader of The Hustle. And that was like our ad on Facebook. On Twitter, I see that ad everywhere. For every newsletter, for every like AI, where it was like, my boss thinks I know about AI. I don't. The reason
Well, what happened is you did it. Morning Brew then did it. So they copied.
Did they
you.
Do it? That's
yeah, Morning
funny.
Brew's been running an ad like that for a long time. So you, if you've seen those ads, you're like, oh, good idea. I'll copy that. Then the other thing was Facebook launched the ad library. So now you can go see other companies' ads. So you can just go and look. What ads are they running? Google launched an ad library. TikTok now launched an ad library, so you can go see anyone's TikTok ads too. And then you've talked about that ad on the podcast. And I noticed after you said it on the podcast, then people started running it. Then there's also a guy who worked for you, who worked for us at Milk Road, who then goes and he's pitching up. He's basically going and telling every newsletter company, I'm the key to the growth of the hustle, of Milk Road, of every fucking newsletter company. I did it. I'm the best. I could tell you exactly what they did. And I don't know about you for the hustle, but for us, I'm like, this guy is massively overstating what he did. But like, whatever. I guess.
We were already had a million subscribers. But yeah, I mean, I didn't work closely with him, but I'm sure he's great. I just,
bad at his job, but he is definitely overselling. And people will come to me and they'll be like, hey, I just wanted to get a quick reference check. This guy basically, like, he has a presentation, a sales deck that just says, like, I did everything for Milk Road. Like, I figured it all out. I did all these things. And like, is that legit? And I'm like, no. And actually, the funny thing is, I think in the short term that helped him. In the long term, that hurt him, because two very big names have come to me and they said, hey, I'm thinking about hiring this guy. Sounds like he did great work for you guys. Just want to do a quick pulse check. Like, thumbs up, thumbs down. Would you recommend? And I was like, I wish I could say yes, but like, no, for these two reasons. One, he's overstating what he did. If he just said what he did, they would have been fine. Two, when we sold the company, he went and put up a Twitter thread saying like, hey, Milk Road sold, and here's all the things that they do to grow. And we asked him, we were like, hey, man, can you take that down? Like, we're still running as a business. Like, you're a service provider. You're a contractor for us.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We're a client of yours. We never said.
You want some confidentiality.
You should never go publish all of your clients' things. It's not actually all, but like, we don't want any of this stuff out there.
Right.
And he's like, no, I got to get mine too from the sale. And I'm like, what? Like, dude, I'm asking you to take this down. Are you really going to, like, your client?
So it was never deleted?
And he tried to say no again. And I was like, wow, like, Jesus, that is like insanely unprofessional to do that, in my opinion, at least. And, you know, so whatever, he did delete it after that, after I was like, wow, are you serious? This is actually the stance you're going to take? That's an insane stance to take.
Yeah, and I don't like when people talk about
two really big names that I think would have been like way bigger than The Hustle, way bigger than Milk Road. We're going to work with them, have asked me. And I'm like, I'm just going to tell you what my experience was. You decide. And they're like, oh, no, we would not want to work with somebody who does that. And I was like, damn, like the short term benefit
that hurts.
Leads to long term loss, unfortunately. Like, you know, that's the irony of doing stuff like that. And I've done stuff like that too, where I make a short term good decision that actually costs me in the long run, but it's hard to see in the moment, you know. So that's an
expensive lesson. But my question was, were you running this ad and did it still work? Up until we sold, it was still working.
We didn't run that ad. We didn't run My Boss Thinks I'm Whatever. We did, I think, try a version of like, my friends think I'm, you know, like, whatever. My friends think I know everything about crypto. What they don't know is that I just read the Milk Road every morning. Something like that. I think we ran that. But those weren't high performers. Like, that wasn't the highest performer. We had other stuff that was better performers, but...
Dude, that was our best one.
More than 50% of our subscribers were organic. So it does, like, you know, if more than 50% of your growth comes organic, then that means it's the content the brand.
Dude, I've talked to so many of these new newsletter guys and they're all doing. So when we started The Hustle, like, up into hundreds of thousands were organic. And then we like learned, I didn't know what paid marketing was. Then we learned about it. And then we started doing this thing called co-registration, which it would typically only scammy marketer type of people would do that. Right. Like people selling like sex pills and shit. And we were like, well, that's interesting. Like, in theory, let's actually figure out what it means in a non-scammy way. And so we like...
Well, explain it. So you go to a site.
So for example, you go to... I'll try to find a real life example. If you go to bold.org, it's a website where you can apply... you can enter in your information and it automatically applies you to tons and tons of different scholarships. And what it says was, great, if you want, somehow they have a point system where it's like, it's free to use, but you have to sign up for like these newsletters in order to be able to, apply to even more scholarships. And so we would pay bold.org some money, I don't remember the money, $1, let's say, for every college kid who entered their email and sent them to The Hustle, and then they would go and subscribe to more stuff, more scholarships. And so that's what co-reg is. So you're registering for one thing, but then you are asked to register for another thing in exchange for some type of perk. Typically, that's an internet marketing hack that's done with scammy stuff, really scammy people. But we went to Product Hunt and we were like, hey, have you guys thought about doing co-reg? And they're like, yeah, we're working on it. We're like, well, that would be great. We would be your first customer. And so that's how we started growing really quickly. Or we were already growing quickly, but once we were adding like 5,000 people a day.
We have to reinvent at every stage, right? At the beginning, you do friends and family. Then you do your own social media. Then you do posts that are really good content that's going to go viral, that's going to get you now to the next level of organic. Then you start layering on some paid. Then you have to diversify your paid because not one source is going to work as well as the others, and they don't all scale, right?
And when you're adding 100,000 people a month, you have like 50% or some amount is still organic, but then that's still like 80,000 customers that you need to sign up. So some will be Facebook, some of this, some that, some co-reg. And so co-reg worked really well. The problem with it is that it's a very low intent reader. So like the scholarship person isn't like the highest is like, hey, Sean, sign up for Milk Road. It's awesome. That's high intent. Less high, but still high is like, oh, I saw this ad on Facebook saying there's this newsletter. That sounds cool. I'm interested. The lowest intent is I'm trying to get a coupon for Target, but I have to give my email. In order, that's the lowest intent. Or I'm trying to win this free prize and I get more entries if I just sign up for this fucking newsletter, whatever, I'll sign up for it. That's the lowest intent. Now I talked to, the thing is that you grow quickly. So for a quarter, you can get an email subscriber, but for every 10 email subscribers, only one will actually be of high quality. And so the problem is you get addicted to this. And so I was talking to all these other newsletter guys and they're like, I got to 100,000 in like 6 months. I'm like, oh, sick. How? They go, oh, this thing called co-reg. And I'm like, oh, you're fucked. This is a horrible newsletter. Exactly. You're fucked. This is your business is dog shit.
By the way, there's other versions of this. So Substack has a thing where you subscribe to someone's Substack and then they're like, here's five other Substacks you might like auto checked. And you're just trying to continue. And now you're subscribed to five newsletters. And you see people whose curve on Substack looks flat, like, you know, normal good growth, and then like hockey stick. It's like, yes, I crossed 300,000, 500,000 subscribers. And it's like, yeah, but these aren't people who actually want to read your thing. And then the other thing is that they think the open rate is high, but open rates nowadays, because of the way that
they've changed with Apple
and cookie stuff works, it's not reliable. So for example,
when we started, 40% was good. When we started, 40% was good. That was considered the best. And then 50%, we would get 50%. And we were like, we're the greatest there is. Now everyone is 50%.
Right. And because it's because they're not actually 50%. It's because open rates cannot be measured the same way they used to be able to be measured, where it was more reliable. Now you have to use click-through rate or whatever. Like, are people actually clicking your ads, your content, that sort of thing. And so this guy that I was talking about for the Milk Road, he was the one who was like, oh, yeah, co-reg, we should do this. And we were like, okay, let's try it. Let's see how it goes. And we tried it. Sure enough, you get good growth out of it, but
and you get addicted to it.
But it's the quality so bad. So after we sold, we were like, hey, some point we were like, okay, let's look at all these sources. We're getting this organic. We're getting this from here. We did an analysis, and we were like, all right, let's test this co-reg thing. The open rates look good. How do we figure out if these are high quality or not? Like, I don't know. Open rates look good. The cost is good. Should be fine, right? We sent him an email. We said, hey, just wanted to. Blah, blah, blah. Like, you know, if you read the Milk Road and you like it, like, just respond with like, whatever. Hello. You know, just,
tell me where you're like, hey, you're a subscriber to the Milk Road. Where do you live?
Yeah,
we want to know where you live.
If somebody actually reads your daily newsletter 50% of the time, they're so excited to get an email from the founder that says, you know, hey, I'm just reaching out to say whatever. They'll give a very high reply rate. Guess how many replies we got?
I have no idea.
I think we literally got 3 replies.
Out of how many sends?
There was maybe like, I don't know, I want to say like, 20,000 or something like that. Like
20,000 and 3 replied.
It was like a big number. Yeah. I don't know the exact, but like, I know that the reply number was something like 3 replies that day, maybe more trickled in, but like, doesn't matter. That day, 3 people replied and we were like, oh, cut this off immediately. And that same guy goes and he peddles that to all the other newsletters. It's like, yeah, this is what The Hustle did. This is what Milk Road does. It's like, we did with a small percentage of what we were doing. And as soon as we were able to test it, we were like, oh, screw this. Why would we want a subscriber number? Like, unless you're trying to dupe somebody, you don't want a subscriber number that's not real, right? Like, real subscribers is the only way to build a real business. And, you know, I talked to the Morning Brew guys, and I think they're also very, like, they, I think, just straight measure on, like, what does this lead to in terms of clicks on our ads?
Yeah.
Like, or like conversions even, you know, from
there. How many people buy our advertising?
How many people end
stuff?
Up buying something, right? Like if you, because if I'm getting you as a customer, that's the right way to do it, right? That's the sustainable way to do it. But I don't think people, you know, kids these days, they're doing it differently than back in our day, one year ago.
Yeah, I remember way back then, 6 months ago. No, that's how they have to do it. And they also, another thing is, I talked to another guy and I was like, well, of your list, how many, if you said that you're hosting an AI event that was free, how many people are going to show up? He's like, oh, we'd sell out immediately. I'm like, great. Then you're doing that. That sounds like you're doing it correctly. And then I talked to another guy. I'm like, well, how many people would show up to this event? And they're like, well, no one. I'm like, well, then this business sucks. Like they're not real. You should bail and quit or start over. But yeah, the co-reg thing is mostly nonsense. It doesn't always have to be, or you could, it's kind of a pain in the ass if you make money through advertising. It's like you need to hit a top line number. And that's why I hate advertising, is because there's inverse incentives. So like not everyone's aligned for the same thing. And so I think that's why I fucking hate advertising. It could be done well, but when you have like a team to support and you want Katie to hit her quota and get paid, I'm like, ah, fuck. You got to sacrifices. And I hate that. But anyway, I wanted to bring up this ad because we were talking about copywriting. On Friday, I interviewed Laird Hamilton.
How did it go?
So it went really bad. It went very...
Not what I expected you to say at all.
It went bad. The
like
reason
what?
Well, he's not a business guy, for one. But I'm like a fitness... I'm into fitness and stuff. But I wanted to ask him all the fitness stuff. But I was like, I watched so many hours of him leading up to it. And I was like, I don't want to just ask the same questions. Like, I just watched so much of your stuff that all the questions that I thought I was going to have, you've already answered them. Yeah, you've answered it. And so there was like that there. But also, dude, I just think it's a bummer to meet your heroes because he's amazing. But I just want him to be this like idea rather than this reality. Do you know what I mean? I like him. So like, I remember, like, I've been very lucky to meet a bunch of my heroes. And once you meet them, they're a little bit less of a hero. And I think I just prefer them being a hero. Not to say that he didn't live up to my expectations. He did. It was just that I don't want to be even remotely a peer of his. I want him to be like, you know,
right,
my great-grandpa who I've heard stories about.
If you're a fan of this podcast, if you consider me a Sam, you know, somebody that you look up to in any way, prepare to be disappointed, all right? We're just very average people. When you meet us, we will destroy, we will ruin this podcast for you.
But I was super self-conscious about it. So if you guys hear the pod, let me know like in the YouTube comments what you think. But it was only okay. I think it was only okay for me because I was interviewing him, but I just learned so much about him. And I'm like, oh, I already know everything. There's nothing new to know about you. Or
dude, you
I'm just not unique
gears.
Enough to ask a question.
You should have shifted gears and gone Bobby Altoff on him.
What's that? Oh, like
that girl, the awkward interview girl.
And just act like you don't care. She has shot up. So basically, I saw her on TikTok. And the thing about TikTok and Instagram is you don't know who else knows what you're watching, right? Like it's hard. Like there's no like chart or there's no like greatest hits. And so I was just like, who is this random chick popping up? Is interviewing these guys when she's like in her bed,
like, interviewing and, like Drake, like not just like.
But then
guy.
I saw Drake, and I'm like, "What the hell? What is going on with this? How is this like just this 21 year old woman who's like rude to her guest talking to Drake?" And then on the podcast charts, I think she was number one for a few days.
Yeah, she's been in the top five. She went from I've never heard of this person, and she didn't have a podcast to a top five podcast in like 2 weeks. So we're doing something wrong.
Well, yeah, for sure. She has this ad for SeatGeek. SeatGeek advertised on her podcast with Drake. And she was like, so today's sponsor is SeatGeek, which makes sense because Drake apparently hosts events. And I think SeatGeek lets you buy tickets for events. So if you like events and Drake.
I've never been, but
yeah.
You would want to go.
Yeah. And she goes, and they give you $20. Cool. Like that's her ad. Guess, so
no, the call to action was the best. She said something like, she was like, "So go, you can use SeatGeek if you want, I guess."
Dude, it's so funny. She's pretty good. I don't want to listen to 60 minutes of that interview, but
she's interviewing Drake, which is like, I think the first podcast that came out, and she's like, in the middle of it, she's like, I don't know any other questions. Do you have any other questions? And he's like, not really. Like,
weren't they in bed under the covers during the interview?
Yeah, they're in a bed, which is just, I mean, she's a genius, clearly. So she's a genius. So I think her story is she was like a mom. She was like a mommy TikToker. But I don't really understand how she went from mommy TikToker to podcaster interviewing Drake with like a really clear brand that's amazing, like a very distinct style that's amazing. Because if you watch her TikToks, she doesn't talk like that.
Yeah,
it's just a character she's, or she doesn't, I mean, it's not like, I don't think her TikTok is mainly like that. Like, I'm gonna pull one up right now, but like,
no, some of it is like normal, or her joking around with her friends. But no, it's like Stephen Colbert, but instead of this conservative guy, it's the I don't give a shit type of person. Yeah. So
she, I watched like an hour straight of one of these podcasts. I rarely listen to, like, if you tell me, hey, there's a new podcast, like I need 10 people to recommend a podcast before I go try it. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like an easy ask, but, yeah, I got hooked on her shit really quickly and watched a hour long awkward interview with her and Mark Cuban and her with Rick Glassman. I don't know if you saw this one, but she did one with Rick Glassman and it didn't seem like he was in on the joke.
Who's Rick Glassman?
I think he was actually the first one that she recorded. Rick Glassman's a comedian. He's
really, oh, got really it. Funny. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He might have been in on the joke because he's like a very talented guy. Like he could find that line where it looks like he's not in on the joke, but he is. But she was just like, she's just awkwardly interviewing him. And he, at some point, he's just like, what is this? Why are you doing this? And then she's like, why am I doing what? I'm interviewing you. And he's like, no, but you're saying that you're interviewing me, but everything I say, you just say is a lie. Why would I lie? Why would I come to your podcast and lie? And she's like, I don't know. Why are you lying? And then he's like, I'm not lying. Is this your bit? Is this what you do? And he's like, he just can't figure it out. And he's like, I'm sorry. I was frustrated and defensive because I felt like you were trolling me or something. I didn't understand what was happening. I still don't really understand what's happening, but I'm going to do better to try to answer your questions. And then she's like, thank you. You were being mean. And he's like, I wasn't being mean. I was reacting.
What happens before and after the interview. Because after, like, so you and I have done some stuff in person with people and like you're really cool and friendly enough to people. But I don't know what you do afterwards, like particularly with like a Tucker Carlson interview where he's like getting right. mean with people. And like, do you shake hands afterwards and say thanks for coming? You know what I mean? Or does like, does it end? Does
that
it
was
end?
Terrible. Thank you. That was that.
Yeah. Like, oh, we dislike each other strongly. Yeah. So I'm curious to see what like the performance where she's like and scene. And does she like be friendly and like give him a hug? I would like to see what that before and after is like.
Yeah, I don't know. She's a mystery to me. Somebody explain this to me. I just don't understand who she is, how she landed such big guests, why she immediately is so popular. I mean, like, I get her brand, but like, how did she even break out? That's kind of what I don't get. But whatever. Bobby Altoff. Good for you, Bobby Altoff. 25 years old, I think. 25, 26 years old. And like, clearly going to be one of the most famous podcasters already.
Yeah, fuck us. Yeah, I mean, that's the third time that's happened, or the second time it happened with the Caller Daddy woman, where like it was like episode 2, she shot up there. That's pretty rare. I mean, it's more common with YouTube. With podcasts, that doesn't happen often at all.
Right. Now someone's going to do that obnoxious tweet where it's like, everybody thinks Bobby Altoff is an overnight success. Here's how it was 10 years in the making. And then it's just going to be like, you know, some stupid origin story that like really wasn't, like she actually is kind of an overnight success. It's okay.
Yeah,
it's
which okay. is cool. I like
there should
those.
Be some, right?
There should be some. People talk about like they don't exist. I'm like, well, Instagram was only 2 years old. I mean, right. Like those are real. Like it's real. Which one of these things you want to go to?
All right. Dating. So you and I both happily married off the dating market, but shit's getting crazy in the dating world. I don't know if you've seen these two things I'm going to tell you about. The first one is called Chaos Singles Party. Have you ever heard of this?
No. Do you download the dating apps now just to like check it out and see what it's about?
If my wife asks, it's just for science. No, of course, no. I bought all these, but I read this is in the New York Times. So I read this story in the New York Times and I was like, what? This sounds fascinating. So here's the story. This woman, Cassidy Davis, is on the dating app. She's just a normal person. And it's Valentine's Day 2022. So last year, Valentine's Day, she's frustrated. She doesn't have anything to do on Valentine's. So she just basically, she's like, hey, here's what we should do. We should throw like a singles party on Valentine's Day. So if you're single on Valentine's Day, come to this. She tells every one of her girlfriends who's also struggling with online dating, hey, match with someone on Tinder and then invite them to this party. Invite them to a house party. And they're like, what? And she's like, yeah, just match with one person and invite them as your plus one to this house party. But everybody's going to do it. So it'll be just a bunch of single people at this party. And she's like, all right. So they try to do it. She, at the last minute, is like, I don't know if anyone's going to come. So she invites 65 guys from Tinder to be like, come. And they're like, what is happening? Is this real? Are you like catfishing me? She's like, dude, just either come or don't come. All right, that's it. And so she has this house party. And you could see the video on her TikTok, but it's like a very...
Which city?
I'm not sure where this one was, but it was like a small thing. It looked like maybe there was like 20 people there, but they were kind of having fun. So it was like a bunch of single young people playing like drinking games, whatever. She records, she makes a TikTok out of it, stitches it together, like just the highlights of the party, basically, posts it on TikTok and says what she did. She's like, I did the most chaotic thing possible for Valentine's Day. I told all my girlfriends to match with someone on Tinder and invite them to my house for this house party. And it was awesome. And then that thing explodes. That video gets like, whatever, tons of views. And the concept, people really like this concept. And so she's like, I'm going to do another one. So she posts an update. She's like, I'm going to do another one in 2 or 3 weeks. Puts a link up for the Chaos Singles Party. Same rules.
Is it free?
I think it might have been free. Maybe there's a cover charge. I'm not sure. 500 people show up to that one. And since then, for the last year and a half of this woman's life, she's just been going on the road, traveling city to city. She partnered up with Tinder. They like promote this thing now. In the app, they'll even promote her parties. And she gets paid to basically host these things. And now 200, 300 people a night come to these singles parties. Same rules. Match with one. That's your plus one. Come to this event. You can mix and mingle. You can stick with the person you invited or just whatever. It's all just people on Tinder who want to like have this chaos singles party. I love this idea.
This is awesome. I'm looking at her TikTok now.
So well done by her. And now these things are like big. Like they're partnering with like legit venues. It like looks like a lot of fun. It looks like a whole scene now.
This is awesome. I'm looking at her TikTok. This woman's talented. Did I tell you about or did you ever see the Twitter things that I used to do for dating sometimes?
Yeah, those were great. It was basically like great. Date my friend, right?
It was basically like, it was Thanksgiving and we were having friends over and some of them were single. And I'm like, they were like, hey, can you post me on your Twitter? I want...
Or you said it? Because that's a crazy ask.
One of the people made a joke. They're like, dude, just post me on your Twitter. I need to meet a guy. Or some of them, it was like one of Sarah's friends was like, I need to meet a nice guy who's successful. Can you like introduce me? I was like, I'm just going to post you on Twitter. And then I was like, well, I don't want to make you the only person. Like I'm your pimp. So I'm going to get 10 friends. And the Twitter said, the tweet said, hope you're hungry on Thanksgiving Day. You know, like here's 10 people, 10 of my buds. So, yeah. I was like, hope you're hungry.
Meet my friend, Jessica.
yeah. here's 10 of my friends who are single. And I said like a little bit about what they do for work. And I just went on their Instagram and took a picture and, it got viewed like 2 million times. And I got DM'd by a lot of brands like, hey, you want to make this a thing? We'll sponsor it. I was like, no, that's not going to be my thing. I don't want that. No, I was just fucking around. And I think that could potentially work. Like we actually turn it into like an affluent crowd dating app or something like that. I think I did it with Jonathan, and Jonathan actually met a girl who he went out with. I think like a handful of times. Like so for Jonathan, I think it was successful.
Is this true? What happened after you got posted on this thing?
Well, one of the girls who applied, shout out to Connor Ann, she came to the South By meetup that we did. So I got to meet her there, hung out a little bit. But in terms of like my DMs, like I got hit up by a gay dude and this nice Indian woman who I decided not to reply
so,
to.
Super successful.
Yeah. But for her and for the women, I'm sure it crushed.
Are you still seeing that girl? Connor, are you guys just buddies now?
Nah, not really. She lives in Florida, so.
But it kind of worked.
Yeah.
We're grasping for straws here.
I mean,
pretty successful, sounds like.
These gorilla things, I love, by the way. I love these, like, gorilla dating. Yes.
So here's another one. Date Me Docs. Have you heard about this trend?
So it's dateme.directory. Is that the URL?
Well, that's the directory of them. But Date Me Docs is like, basically you take, instead of going on a dating app, you create a Google Doc and you just write in long form all about you, your story, what you want, who you are, what you're into, what you're not into, where your boundaries are, all that stuff. You just make a very detailed Google Doc and that's your profile. And then somebody created the directory that links all the people, it's like an Airtable table. So it'd be like, you know, here's, you know, Christina, she's a female, she's interested in men, she's age 42, and it's just literally an Airtable. And
dude, they're all poly. They put mono and poly. They're like, it looks like almost half of them are poly. Does that mean they want to have an open relationship or they're not serious?
Kids these days. No, I think it's like, I think they want to like be dating a bunch of people at once or something. I think that's
poly. It's like half of them are poly. That's wild to me.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, I think, you know, that's something that's changed. I think since we were like, when I was dating 10 years ago, I never met anybody who was like, yeah, I'm polyamorous.
That's, no, it was like you see it on a TV show
that came up. It's like, it was like,
yeah, the only people who did that are like, it's like a guy who's got like 10 wives and it's on the TLC channel.
Yeah, it comes on after John and Kate plus 8.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is, I think that's new. So anyways, these docs, if you look at these, click into some of these docs.
They put photos and stuff and like a huge bio. This is wild.
I clicked this one that's by Misha. It's the fourth one down. So Misha is a male and it takes you to a website that there's just like these like torches, like you're entering a dungeon. Probably not the vibe, Misha, that you want, but here we go. And then the title is just romance. I am currently single looking for a primary partner. Hot. That's hot how you said that. Primary partner. I like that. Only been in open relationships, just bought a house, blah, blah, blah. And then it's like, here's a bunch of my favorite blog posts. Here's some of my first dates. You can chat with me on Discord. Here's my Spotify. Here's some pictures of me, a bunch of pictures, boom, boom, boom. All right. So that's Misha. But like one of the things I noticed, I clicked through a bunch of these is how intellectual all of these are. So they'll be like, you know, things you don't normally put on a dating profile. It'd be like, here's one. I'm on this woman's, page, Shrida. She says, I'm not ideologically monogamous, meaning I don't think monogamy is innately superior to polyamory. I hold romantic feelings for more than one person at once, but also struggle with jealousy, blah, blah, blah. It's like very, it's like, is this therapy? What is this? This is like a whole like open book style of letting somebody into your brain, which I can definitely see working for some people. And I can see it totally not working for the type of person who they don't want out. So I actually think this is a really great idea because I think it attracts in a lot of the same type of person, the kind of like a little bit overly intellectual, very open-minded type of crowd that would be attracted, you know, it's kind of tech focused crowd here.
Oh my gosh, this is wild.
Sam's just smiling. Sam is just literally, he's looking at his screen and he's just smirking.
I'm looking at a lot of this. There's one guy, he's got a 15-page user manual and he like documents his whole life to explain how to like, and he talks about like ethical stuff. He's like, the correct answer to the trolley problem is to kill one person to save five. Like
there is a correct answer.
Like this is wild. And on some regard, I'm like, well, if you're like a single woman who's like 30 and you're like, look, I just need to meet like a competent man who's like thoughtful, I guess this is the way to go. Unfortunately, these aren't the type of guys that typically like can woo a woman.
I'm on a doc right now and there's a whole subsection called child rearing plans. And then it's 70 paragraphs of their plans for child rearing. This is pre-first date, which is kind of amazing.
So have you heard of, this reminds me of two things. One, if you, there's this guy named Christian Rutter, I think his name is. He founded OkCupid. He was one of the three or four co-founders and he had a blog on all the data that OkCupid had. And so, and then eventually turned it into a book. And the thing was basically like, you say one thing, but your actions on our dating app say another thing. Like you say you want X, Y, and Z. And I think one of the big takeaways was you say you want this, this, and this. You really just go after people's photos. So like you say you don't want to, you say you don't want a smoker, but if they're hot enough, you'll go with a smoker. Right. You say you don't want an animal lover, but if they like fit your, like your physical wants, you're going to want to be with them. And like that always intrigued me. And that's why I don't think some of these like long form things will actually work. I think they want it to work, but it won't. The other thing is, have you heard about The League? Do you remember the dating app, The League?
Yeah, she came on the pod once. Long time.
Yeah, her name is Amanda Bradford. She's a buddy of mine. She sold The League. You know they sold The League?
I didn't know they sold.
So they sold it. Yes, I believe it was a very good sale. They sold it to Match. I think Match.com or one of the big ones. And I asked why they bought it. And she was like, well, basically, we only had like 5 or 10 employees or something at The League. It was a really small team. But The League originally, I don't know if it started out as the phrase Ivy League, but it was basically like high-end, to meet a high-end partner, and you had to like apply and stuff like that. And she was like, one day I just said, I went to, she's a developer. And she goes, I logged into like our app store account. And I was like, we're charging $20 a month right now. How high does the app store let me charge? Like what's the highest amount for subscription revenue? And I think it was like $99 a week. She's like, that's the highest. I go, fuck it. That's what we're going to do. We're just going to do $99 a week. And she was like, everyone at my company and everyone outside said it's not going to work. She's like, it crushed it. Our revenue went up like crazy. And one of the biggest reasons why Match bought us is they're like, we need to figure out how to sell products that are hundreds of dollars a month. And no one knows how. And she's like, oh, I'll teach you how. All you do is you go to the app store and you just delete the number that you put in and you just put the higher number. And guess what? People are still going to do it. And that was like her thing, was that it was a really, really expensive dating app, and it totally worked for higher end people. And so I still think that could be cool. What you and I didn't have when we were younger, when we were dating, we probably wouldn't have qualified then, and we are, and unfortunately we're not, we can't use it now, but basically, have you heard of Raya?
Yeah, it's like a celebrity, it's like you gotta be hot and famous to be in or something like that.
Yeah, I think they just look at your Instagram. Like if you're verified on Instagram, you're allowed to do it. So Raya is like, everyone who's single is like saying like, oh, of course, we know all about it. But Raya is cool. But I like these like exclusive dating apps and these expensive ones. I think it's way better. Totally. I've got friends that run Tinder competitors, and it sounds like a horrible business. It's one of the very few businesses where you can't be like number 3 or number 4. Like there's basically number 1 and number 2, and that's it. At least that's what it appears like if you're going for mass market. Right.
What's the quote? It's like, you know, I don't want to be a part of any club that will have me as a member. That's sort of what you want when it comes to dating or cool things. This Date Me Docs thing, I think, is a really fun idea. I'm glad whoever, I don't know who created this, but kind of like a cool idea. And obviously, like, things like this have been around for a long time, right? Like Indian people famously, like, this is how my parents got married, for example. You write in the newspaper, like, your they call it bio data. It's like your name, your age, your job, your whatever, and you just create this profile that's like text only, and people are like, cool, married, let's do it. And that's basically how things work. So, you know, stuff like this actually can work. The funny thing is, this is actually, you know what I'm gonna actually do? I'm actually just gonna recruit on here. I think this is a great recruiting platform. I think these people are probably all really smart, thoughtful individuals who are tech savvy, a lot of developers on here.
They put their GitHub profile.
Yeah, fucking LinkedIn. I'm scraping this for leads to hire from. This is amazing. Dude, this one guy on here says 16 years old. That's a trap, Jack. I'm not clicking that. You think I'm clicking that? I've seen way too many episodes of Chris Hansen. I'm not clicking that. I know where that shit, straight to the FBI website, bro. Yeah.
The next phrase you hear is, come on in,
check
have a seat.
Check yourself in to the Folsom prison.
Yeah. Dude, one of my first internet companies was called Bunk. And the premise was we would put these ads,
close to the next Airbnb.
Well, it should have been Airbnb, and it should have been just Tinder for Tinder. But it basically, the way it started was we would go and find online 3 and 4 bedroom apartments. And we would like, if it was a 4 bedroom apartment for $4,000, we would say we have 1 bedroom available for $1,000. And we would get 500 people to apply. And then we would host a party and team up people to get that place as well as a bunch of other places. Cause we're like, oh, you guys are all looking for similar budgets apparently. So just like come and team up and get your own apartment. And it worked. It worked quite well. And then a bunch of the people at the party started like hooking up with each other. And we didn't catch the clue that we should have just made this a dating thing. Right. That's, and then we launched this app. We called it Roommates. And it was basically Tinder for roommates. And again, we didn't catch the clue that people, like I actually met a girl, two different girls on that app that I ended up dating in 2013 or 14. And again, we didn't catch the clue. We should have just done this for dating. It would have worked a lot better.
Yeah, the dating game is changing. You know, one thing that dating is always going to be a problem. Like it will never not be a pain point for people. Like no, and there's no such thing as sort of like solving dating. And anytime one thing gets popular, it creates the need for another. So like, you know, Tinder created the need for something like Hinge. And now when you have sort of like the Tinder and Hinge generation, I talk to people who are dating now and they're like, oh, you know what? The two worst things about those, like about Tinder and Hinge is like, you get either on Tinder, you just get bots. Like basically it's just girls trying to get you to like subscribe to their OnlyFans. Like, oh, this really hot girl matched with me and she's interested in me. She tells me to just click this link and then like, follow that. Oh man, this is just an upsell. Like this is a bot just upselling me basically. The other one is people that, like because like we were joking about the poly thing, but like people have a lot of different, like, I don't know, preferences and kind of different situations. There's like a lot more configurations than like, I'm a boy who likes girls. I'm a boy who likes boys. Right. Like that was kind of what we knew was like, you know, we were checkers, not chess when it came to dating. Right. There was only so many moves you could make. You could move forward and backwards. That was it. And so you're red or black. That's the game.
Yeah.
Now it's like, you know, multicolored chess. And so the way that my friend was telling me, he's like, oh, there's this one app. I think it was called Field or something like that. Maybe I got that wrong, but I think it's called Field. And he's like, I like it because people just super straight up. It's like the culture on that app is you got to be ultra direct. It's like, I am looking for, and you say the exact thing you're looking for and what you're into and what you're not into. So that like people know, like they're not going to meet somebody. Oh, this person's really cool, but they want a completely different type of relationship configuration, gender configuration that I'm into. And so, so I think, you know, there's always a new need.
You know how when you and I do meetups and every once in a while a line will form to like say hi. It's like, hey, how are you? I was joking with my friend and she's like, you know, that's what it feels like to be a hot chick all the time. Like, like, you know, like when you and I will have like an MFM meetup and we walk in and you'll see like, oh, people like are staring at us like this guy's giving me energy. Like he wants to like me to open. I'll turn my hips a little bit and let him like and give him like the you know, like I'll
open my hips.
That's what it is. It's like wherever you point your junk, it's like you'll be at a thing and you're like one on one with this other guy. But you feel this. It's all dudes. And you feel this
energy.
You feel this other guy hovering. You're like, all right, I'll turn my hips a little so this guy could get in on the combo. And that's basically what it feels like to be like a 6 out of 10 woman, like all the time, or maybe even lower, like just to be a woman all the time. It's just, you just, whatever you want, it's yours.
Dude, just last thing on this. Do you remember, like when I was in college, the game was like, you would go to a bar or a club or whatever. And literally it was like a physical version of Tinder. It was like, you just go, you guys just go behind a girl and just grind. And if the girl... like accepts the grind, then you're in. If they don't,
it's like National Geographic. Like, it's like National Geographic, man. You're like a bird flexing its feathers.
That's the craziest thing that used to be normal. I don't know if that's still normal. That's the craziest thing that like I experienced in my life.
Did you do that? I never did that. That was so uncomfortable.
Dude, that was all anybody around me even knew. Like that was
get rug burn on your junk. Oh, yeah. No, not a chance. I was too uncomfortable for that. You had a question on here that I actually was thinking about the other day. You have a question on here, and I originally thought I wrote this, but I guess you did, where it's, what's an example of things today that our grandkids in 50 years will think is absolutely insane? I've been thinking about this because on TikTok and Instagram, the kids
grinding is my example. Grinding at the club is my first example.
I don't know if they do that anymore or not, but
it didn't even take 50 years. It took me 15 and I already realized that was batshit crazy then.
Well, you'll see these videos and they'll be of high school. So like the kids now will be like, check this out. This is a home video of the class of 2008 in high school. And you like see them walking around and like you see like the stuff that we used to wear and you see like our razor flip phones. Yeah. And then like the kids reminisce like, I can't believe they did this or that was so much better or this was so much worse. You had a cool question on here about what do you think will be crazy
Yeah, I think about this a lot. What are things that 50 years from now, like our grandkids, will look at the way we live today and be like, what the hell were you thinking? Right? Like, you know, there's past examples. Like if you go way past, it's like slavery. Wow, I can't believe that was just like the way you guys did things or whatever, right? Like, you know, riding horseback. That's crazy. That's how people got around, or just like people just dying of like everything, you know, like early age. Like that's crazy. That was so risky to have a kid. Like, you know, one out of what, four or five kids would just die before they even hit 10. Like that's really, really rough.
I was reading this Lewis and Clark book, and whenever they get sick on the trail, they like give each other pills and they're like, we're just going to give you diarrhea and you're going to shit out the sickness. They call it a rush pill. They go, we're going to give you these pills and you're going to get tons of diarrhea and you're going to be healed. And that was like the thing. It was just, we're just going to make you poop a ton.
Yeah. We did that with Four Loko. It was great. It just changes shape. All right. So you wrote some on here of more recent history. So you said driving to places without Google Maps. Yeah. I like, these are things that we experienced the before and after, right? Like we're at that age where we experienced the paper map era, the asking people for directions era, just knowing how the interstate system of the United States works. Like my dad just kind of knew roughly what you do to Google Maps.
Dude, I don't even know the highway. I live in Austin. I don't even know the highway, the big highway 1 mile away. I can't even tell you the name of it.
Same. I don't even look up when I drive. I'm just staring at the map. Go by feel. All right. Then you had landlines versus cell, like landlines being the only way to contact someone versus cell phones. We both experienced that. You wrote unsafe cars. What did you mean by unsafe cars?
Dude, my first car was a 1992 Mazda Protege. And we bought it for, I got it for $900 from my mailman. And when you look at that, yeah, but I was friends with my mailman.
Mail, you're like, I'll take it.
Well, sometimes we'd have to wear ties to school every once in a while. And if like my dad went to work too early and he wasn't there, my mailman would tie my tie. So like I got to know the mailman a little bit, kind of weird. Bought my car from $900. And if you see that car to a new, brand new, like Honda Civic, if you ever watch the videos of them running into each other, it's insane. It's absolutely insane. Like the safety, it's pretty wild how dangerous they are. So yeah, I think like these, like when we look at cars, when I look at cars from like the 80s and 90s, it's ridiculous how shitty they are.
Yeah, that's crazy. So what are the ones that you think 50 years from now? So we got a couple on here. Let's just go back and forth. You do one, I'll do one.
The first one is having, and I've said this for a while, but having like a growth on you, having something growing in your body that's going to kill you, that you could have figured out had you just gotten some type of scan a year earlier. So I think that's right. We're going to look back and like, dude, so you just had this thing in your body and you didn't even know?
It'll be like, so how did you know? It's like, well, if you would feel a lump, then you would just go to the doctor. It's like, feel a lump? Yeah, like if it was like a golf ball in you, that's new. All right, let me go get it checked out. That's literally state of the art. Like I just described state of the art procedure.
And half the time you're like, yeah, fuck it. It'll go away. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Maybe it was that burger I ate earlier. Yeah, like floating.
It'll go away. It's probably a lymphoma. It'll go away. And so, yeah, I think that will be a thing. How about yours?
Easy one. I'll start easy mode. Driving yourself. Like, it's pretty clear self-driving cars are, like, on the horizon. The idea that, like, yeah, back in my day, we used to get a license when we were 16 years old. And then, yeah, I just used to drive. I used to just, we used to have a steering wheel in the car. And you just have to look where you're going. And all the other cars were also holding steering wheels, looking where they were going. We tried not to crash.
And if you're on a two-lane road, it's 80 miles an hour the opposite way with 3 feet of distance.
Yeah. They painted these lines. And you just had to stay in the middle. And you just had to keep awake and stay in the middle. Just keep looking. And they'll be like, what? Like, that will sound completely barbaric, right? Like, and it's like, did people not crash? Yeah, they sure did. Did they die?
It's a leading cause of death.
Yeah. Some people get drunk before they did it. Like it'll sound just like, what were you guys thinking? And it'll just be like, well, we just didn't have the tech at the time. But like when you have self-driving cars, cars are going to drive perfectly without you needing, there won't even be a steering wheel in the car. Cars will become like entertainment pods. You'll just play video games or you'll sleep or you'll watch movies or you'll work. Like cars will become a whole different thing very soon. And there's a clear before and after.
Another one is, so different diets, like we still debate, we're like, the Atkins diet, that's a thing. Oh, no, you want to do the other thing where you got to eat lots of carbs, you know, whole grains, that's what you have to do. And to this day, like, we're like, well, which one do you feel good on? I don't know. Like, just do whatever.
I've alternated carnivore and vegan twice.
Yeah. Yeah. You are a vegan to your, you'll only consume vegans. It's just constantly changed. And like, we don't know which one necessarily is better. You know, there's like really good arguments for both and we aren't sure. And I think that that's pretty insane that, who knows, you know, I don't know.
Right.
By the way, have you ever, do you know a lot of doctors? Do you know how many classes they take on nutrition typically? It's like a class. Like they, yeah. Doctors don't study nutrition, which is pretty insane. Or at least like your average, like,
yeah, or exercise.
Yeah. Your average doctor doesn't exactly, is, doesn't really know too much about exercise and nutrition. And so I think that that's like something we're going to be like, I don't know. You just kind of like tried a different, bunch of different stuff and like you'd read, read a bunch of blog posts on it and listen to podcasts and like, you just kind of guessed a little bit.
Right. I think eating meat, so killing animals to eat their meat, I think will be seen like a genocide, like a slavery. I think it will be seen as completely barbaric and immoral 50 years from now when we have the alternative. There will be an alternative, which is basically lab-grown meat or synthetic food that will solve the kind of protein problems and taste, get the taste right. And the cost right. And at that, when that happens, as that shift happens, we'll just be like, yeah, people just, you just take the thing, you slaughter it, you just kill it, and then you eat it. And they'd be like, you do it yourself? Like, no, 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 gross. I would never do that. They do it, and then they package it, and then we eat it. And they're like, what? Like, didn't you have a dog? It's like, yeah, I would never do that to a dog. It's like, but you would do it to this other animal? It's like, yeah. It's like, how did you guys decide? It's like, well, I guess kind of a cuteness or like, I don't know. Yeah. I don't really know how we decided what was completely illegal and immoral and would get you canceled versus like you eat it two times a day. Like, you know, the line is very thin between like cow and chicken and dog, right? Like it's not that clear why one yes versus the other no. So I think that eating meat will become, will be seen as basically like our generations, we just committed genocide on animals.
I have 20 cows at my ranch. You knew that, right? That I have cows out there.
They're not yours, right? They're just stray, or they're yours?
They're my neighbor owns them, and they are allowed to use my land to graze. Yeah. And I don't pay taxes because of that, or I pay less taxes. But basically, I get to know them. So like I know who they are. Like I know which ones are which. I know whose mom is who. And like, this fucking sucked. Our first week there that we bought the place, like a 4-month-year-old calf died. But a 4-month-year-old calf is still like 600 pounds or whatever it was. It was like a 600-pound baby. And apparently it like swallowed a golf ball. So my neighbor was like, hey, were you hitting golf balls? I was like, no, dude. I was like, I just moved here. It wasn't me. I don't know.
I saw you on Instagram. Just hitting balls at the new ranch.
Yeah. And I was like, dude, once you get to know me, we'll understand neither of us are golfer. I'm not a golfer. You know what I mean? And then I was like, hey, Jeff, this guy was, I was like, what? Do I go and get like a shovel or something? He goes, oh no, that son of a bitch is going to be gone in 3 days. I was like, what do you mean? He goes, you'll see. And so I come back in 3 days and the whole body and carcass, everything was gone. All the animals, like the birds and hogs, they just ate it. It was completely gone. And the mother would go back to the spot where that calf was and would like mourn. And I was like, my heart was broken. I was like, I don't know if I could eat meat in the same way now. So I felt like devastated. And so since then, I only eat red meat like once a month because the cows, like I get to know them and I'm like, I feel too sad. Right. I can't do it. I'm not that manly of a man. I can't do it. But you think that childbirthing manually is going to be a thing of the past?
Yeah. So when I was in LA, we had dinner with a person named Jessica Ma. You know who she is?
Yeah. She's very impressive.
She's super impressive. I think she did a company called Indonero. I don't know her very well. She's at the dinner, but she was on the other side of the table, so I didn't get to know her too much. But she seemed very interesting. Like
Indonero was like an accounting company that's still very successful, but I think it's so successful now that she just has tons of money and does more stuff.
Yeah, it's a big one. I think she's out of that business now from what it sounded like. And we were like, what do you do? And she's like, oh, I basically invest and incubate like hard science businesses.
And I think she's still only like 29.
Yeah, yeah. It was she was very, very impressive.
We should actually have her on.
Sometimes you could just tell that people are playing a different game at a different level. So there's like same game, different level, and then there's different game, different level. I would put her in different game, different level.
Yeah, you could talk to her. She's pretty brilliant. I'm
within 5 minutes, you're like, oh, okay.
She started in De Niro, an accounting software company at 19.
I don't know much about her, but she started her, I just went to her LinkedIn, by the way, started her first six-figure business when she was in middle school.
Goddamn.
Different game, different level. Again.
Yeah.
I hadn't even grinded yet at that point.
Yeah.
I was pre-grind. Yeah, that's crazy. Anyways, so she's doing this thing. One of the things we were talking to her, but we were like, what are some of the like, crazy science things that you're funding? And then she would say things that were like, her thing was like novel, like she's trying to fund like a novel approach at like an existing thing. I don't want to butcher it, but something like that, which basically like what she called a bold science. So it's like basically like someone taking a new scientific approach at an existing problem. So she'll go to universities and she'll find research labs where they'll be like, this is the one researcher who's trying to do this thing, but this like completely other way than the general field is going. And she's like, cool, I want to fund that because those bold approaches, when they work in a really big way. And so one of the things we talked about just somehow in the conversation came up was like birthing a child is like the natural way or whatever. Like, you know, woman carries baby 9 months, goes into labor, delivers baby, you know, dad snips the umbilical cord. Like that's the process as we know it today.
Wait, does the dad do it?
They are like, dad, you want to do it? You got to be ready.
Is that what I'm going to be offered? I'm not doing that.
In the moment, they're gonna be like, dad, come do this. And you're gonna be like, what? No, I'm good. I'm holding her hand over here. I'm busy. And they'll be like, no, come do it. And then you're gonna be like, oh. And then you're gonna hold the thing and be like, I don't wanna hurt this. Is this gonna hurt? What is this?
Yuck, I'm not doing that, man. I won't even trim her toenails. I'm not gonna touch that thing. I don't wanna touch that thing. Did you do it?
I did it, yeah.
Oh, dude, man, I don't...
The peer pressure of six doctors and your wife who just, like, did a modern miracle, did a, like, act of human bravery and courage, and then you're like, I don't feel comfortable doing this. Like,
dude, I am not doing that.
Wimp of the year. Like,
I've already told my wife I think I'm going to pass out. I'm taking a couple Xanaxes in the room. That's too much for me, man. I don't know if I can do that. I'm not one of that guys. I'm not that guy. I don't think
my brother-in-law, when my sister was giving birth, whatever.
Yeah,
he like yawned at some point, and she just turned and looked at him like, "Oh, are you tired?" And he was like, "No, sorry, it's just been like 70 hours."
He's like, "No, it's just boring."
Yeah, it is honestly kind of boring. But yeah, anyways, yeah, you better be prepared. You're gonna have to do it. So anyway, birthing a child. So she was like, yeah, I think that's going to be seen as like unnecessary, sort of barbaric, not like as like scientifically sound as like eventually we'll be able to kind of like almost like incubate the baby and just like deliver the baby through like essentially a machine that a baby will be sort of like grown and delivered that way. And I was
met someone who's had a surrogate?
Yeah, I've met people who've had surrogate. Yeah,
I have, and they've acknowledged that they don't feel they didn't love the kid the same as the other one.
Really? First of all, did you ask?
Of course, I asked. Of course, is that not that's obviously the first thing you're going to ask when you hear about it? There's like a handful
crazy
of questions.
Personal question.
There's a handful of questions, which is A, like obviously, how much does that cost?
You're gonna run you.
Yeah.
One of their
yeah.
other women.
Yeah. Where'd you find them? And then like, what did you do? Like, what was the relationship like? And then like, my fourth question is like, did they ever try to hold the baby hostage?
Yeah. Dude, I could so imagine you being the worst possible surrogate because you would micromanage their lifestyle. Like, hey, it's my baby in there. You better get up here on this treadmill.
But
right
the surrogate can basically hold you hostage, right? Because you'll do anything. You're like, well, yeah, whatever you want. Like, I have to give you what you want because I will do anything for that kid. But then the fifth question was like, all right, but like, did you love the kid as much as the other ones? And the answer was, at first, no. Definitely not. I definitely didn't. They got honest with me And I don't know if I believe it. This is going to be a thing.
But yeah, I feel like if there's the option, it's kind of like the epidural. So I think when we were in the hospital, so my wife's insane and wants to only do natural birth and like feel all the pain for no reason. But she's like, you know, she's like, that's how I get down. I'm like, oh, wow. Oh, my God. Yeah. We are so, I guess opposites do attract. Like, I've taken the life version of an epidural to avoid pain.
You
like,
took the epidural.
Yeah, exactly. I sat down as well. Strap me in.
Doc, you got any leftovers? I'll take it.
We're not going to waste that thing. Get over here.
Yeah. Did you already open it up?
But the doctor had said 90%, she's like 85 to 90% of the patients in their hospital do the epidural because, like, you know, it makes sense. Like, if you can, you know, not feel that level of pain, it's easy to see why somebody would choose that. So, you know, if you just sort of extrapolate from there, you're like, cool, would you like to also not have the 9 months of pregnancy like going on in your body? If there was that option, like, you really think people wouldn't take it? I think people would take it.
Yeah, I think some people would. But I don't know if it's going to be.
Look at the Ozempic thing, dude. If you give people the magic pill, the way out, like, people take that shit. Like, if you get the cost right.
That's a good point. I do love.
People are going to avoid pain, right? They're going to avoid discomfort and pain where they can. I order DoorDash 3 times a day. Like, you think that people aren't going to do this? They're going to do this.
You're right, actually. I love magic pills. Whenever I hear someone who's selling, like, a magical cure, or a magic pill, I'm in.
Probably won't work, but tell me everything.
Ozempic is a little bit of a magic pill. When I was taking it was quite magical. Did you take it?
No, I haven't taken it.
You should. It's awesome.
I guess I'm also kind of crazy in that way where I'm like, well, then it wouldn't be as satisfying. Like, I want to do this on my own.
Yeah, but having abs is pretty sick. So yeah,
totally. Totally agree. Two or three failed diets away from breaking and going on Ozempic. All right, what else we got?
I want to tell you about this thing that when people read it, they probably didn't have the same reaction as I did, but I think they should. So there's this guy, it's called The Greatest Scam Ever Written, and it's about a copywriter who ran this scam. His name was Patrice Runner, and so it started basically in the 90s where he originally saw this ad. Have you ever heard of this book called The Lazy Man's Way to Riches?
Yes.
So I don't remember when that originally came out. I think in the 60s. But The Lazy Man's Way to Riches is a really famous ad. It sold like 3 or 4 million copies of this book. And the ad is famous amongst copywriters because it was really successful. And a lot of the copywriting that we use now for the internet, they kind of originated from that ad. And this guy, Patrice Runner, he saw this ad and he was poor. And he was like, I don't want to be poor anymore. It's pretty amazing that this guy just convinced me to buy this book based off of just like, 20 paragraphs of text. That's amazing. I want to learn how to do that. And so he did. And so he starts studying copywriting and he reads a newspaper about this lady named like Madame Duval. Maria Duval was her name. And basically there was a story about her and how there was a murder in the Caribbean. And how they couldn't find where the body is. And she was a psychic and she led the people to where the body was. And I don't know if that's actually true, if she actually did that, but it was in the newspaper that that happened. And so he contacted her and was like, look, I want to create this psychic company and I want you to be the face and I'm going to give you 5% of profits forever. And you really don't even need to do anything other than like, let me use your face occasionally. And that's it. So she signs up for it. And he starts creating these ads where he would mail people these letters that looked like it was typed out. And it was from Maria Duval. And it would use these amazing like bits of copy. So like the thing would say, like the opening line was, if you've got a special bottle of bubbly that you've been saving for celebrating great news, now is the time to open it up. And that would be like the opening line. And it was a 9-page letter that he would send to people. And he would say, like, you know, send me $40 or $50 and we will like, you'll have good luck. It was basically like you send money and you get nothing. And then eventually it was like, oh, you sent $40. We're going to keep sending you more letters. And they would send like 2 letters a day sometimes. So someone would oftentimes receive 2 letters and they would send like an ad for some vitamin that you would need to take. And recipients, basically it said, the recipients were urged to reply and enclose a check or money order for $50 to receive a mysterious bit of power and luck in order to attract money. And then also, they would after they sent in the money, they would get a document called A Guide to My New Life that included winning lottery numbers. And so this guy did this, and he did it for so well that he was making $20 million a year doing this. And eventually, the thing ran for 10 years, and it made $250 million. And then the government swoops in, and they're like, dude, this is fraud. And so now he's in jail, and he's waiting sentencing. But he might get up to life in prison. So like he's looking at like at least like 20 years of prison for this. And they were like, why'd you do this? He's like, I was just so attracted to copywriting. And with writing, he told the reporter, this is all from this an article from called The Walrus. It was a great article. And they show you like what the ads look like. But we'll talk about that in a second. But he goes, with writing, you could get the attention of someone. And at the end, after just a few minutes, that person sends you a check to get a project. To get a product to an address or company that they've never heard of. And when I read stories like this, that should be the takeaway, which is not like this criminal is bad, but how do I use this amazing copywriting stuff actually for good? And if you click on the article, you'll see the envelopes would have these amazing things. Like we're on the back of the envelope. It would say something like, after you've sealed this envelope, we will be the only one to have ever opened it. And it says, please leave the following blank. And it says, here's the day we received it. Here's the time that we received it. And the recipient, who's supposed to be Maria Duval, would have to check the box in order to like say like, yep, I've opened it. And they put all these little like strange like tactics of getting someone to convince and believe what they were saying. It's incredibly fascinating. So it's called the publication they did an article on this guy. It's called The Walrus. It's really good because you should read this and think like, copywriting is amazing. This guy was a fraud, obviously, so that's bad. But whatever he did, do that for good shit. And it's awesome. It's a really fascinating article about this guy. But now he's going to get sentenced to like, it looks like 20 years of prison. And you know who else did this? This great copywriter, Gary Halbert. You remember Gary Halbert? So
yeah. Why did he go to jail? I didn't actually know. It was tax something?
Yeah. Tax. I think tax. And also basically he would sell this product. I think it was called a family, was it called a suit of arms? What's it called? A crest, like a family crest. So he would sell this product where it's like you mail in like par and then you get mailed back like a crest. I don't know if it's like a graphic, but he just didn't fulfill the orders. He just took the money and like bounced. It was just like,
so
just,
easy to do that too, to just give him a crest. Like,
yeah, he just took
the
money.
He just needed Fiverr. He was just too early.
Yeah. And so he went to prison, I think for like 10 years. And that's where he wrote this really good book where it's like, he wrote letters to his son on copywriting. And that's called The Letters from Boron. I guess Boron was the name of the prison that he was in. But these copywriters, it's really cool how you're able to pull this shit off. And you, by the way, people act like you can't do this anymore because people are smarter. That's not true. You 100% can still pull off all this. It's very fascinating.
I'm with you. I think this is one way that we are very, very similar, where we both read these things and have the same sort of like unexpected reaction, which is some blend of like excitement and admiration, not for the crime, but for the tools that led to the, like, you know, it's the same
it
way
took
I
skill.
Love
it definitely
Ocean's
took skill.
Ocean's 11. It's like, robbing a bank. I like it. I like what goes in to robbing that bank, right? It's like you shouldn't like the criminal in this case, but you are attracted to the skill, to the cleverness, to the guile that goes into doing something like
this.
Well,
every guy who saw Leonardo DiCaprio in Wolf of Wall Street or Catch Me If You Can was like, hey mom, can you give me one of your checks? I want to see if I can actually change the numbers on it. Like everyone, like, you know what I mean? Like everyone who saw that was do the same thing. Or like everyone looked up like, you know, Stratford Oakmont, Jordan Belfort's thing after the Wolf of Wall Street movie. Yeah. Like everyone's attracted
counting cards or whatever, right?
Yeah. Right. They're like, oh, I could counting cards. How does that work? I could do that.
You had a great bit of copy that I read on Facebook the other day. You go, the more shirtless pictures I post, the more free protein I'm sent. Some ask to pay me to post. I've never done that and I don't intend to. But here's some brands that I use, blah, blah, blah. You go, this is the best part. We may be whores in the Parr household, but we're certainly not. That was so good. Where did you get that?
I stole that from Ari Gold. So Ari Gold, that TV show Entourage, So every great copywriter does the same thing where you do this too. Yeah, you hear phrases and you store them and you just store them. And so every single person who's good at writing, you have a bank that you just, we call it a swipe file. But I remember even when I was in sixth grade watching Entourage at Sunday night at 9 p.m. on HBO, I remember hearing that. I go, that's mine. I'm stealing that one. And you just wait for that perfect opportunity to use those lines.
Dude, I have my it's literally called, you said phrases. Literally my sheet is called, my note is called phrases. And I just have so many good ones here. I love it.
Because what people don't know is like, phrases are really important. So I'm working on this with Hampton actually, where we're trying to create like our mantra, or like with every type of community, it's basically a cult or a sorority where you like, you need like a phrase that summarizes it.
You need a crest.
I need a crest. Like I need something. And I've been like tinkering with phrases, and it's so important to like nail a phrase. And like, there's so many like really good phrases. Like for example, I'm reading this book about Martin Luther King's assassination, and he was assassinated while basically he was at this protest where garbage workers, black garbage workers, were wanted to be treated better. And their phrase was just, "I am," and it was underlined, "I am a man." And like that one phrase is, let's treat me like a, you know, I'm not a slave anymore. I'm a man. Treat me like a man. And so I just like all these phrases, and I just like, well, see a phrase. Even that, I remember writing that, "I am a man."
We are mostly men, but looking for more females to apply.
That's too touchy of a subject. That's a whole nother thing. But anyway, I love these like beautiful phrases. I love these beautiful phrases.
So what
you gotta
do you
collect
got for
them.
Hampton? Are you workshopping a couple right now? You want to do a little live workshop?
So one that has gotten shut down, but I love it, which is CTC, confidentiality, transparency, and commitment. So CTC, okay. And it's just, you got, so you miss one meeting, you're banned. We've actually kicked three people out already because we've heard that they've communicated with outsiders of like some confidential information. But CTC is what I'm trying to, which is what I'm trying to get stuck.
Make a thing.
But
yes.
It's not becoming a thing as of late. But
okay.
Yeah.
What else you got?
Well, that's it. That's the only one that's
hard at work over there at Hampton, I see.
Dude, it's hard.
The process can't be rushed, as we say.
It's hard coming up with a phrase. Like, what are these phrases?
Okay,
it's,
what are some ones that you're inspired by? So you said the "I am" one. What are some other ones that you think are well done?
Well, this other one is they're calling it CORE, which is like commitment, openness, respect, and one other thing. I don't know what the E stands for, but CORE. And CORE is not sticking with me. Right, but I'm trying to be open-minded. CORE is not sticking with me because four things to remember is a lot harder than three.
These are more like values then. It's not like
it's values.
Yeah, it's values. It's not like your slogan.
So one thing I've been thinking about is no one, nothing, no one, never. Where I was like, that nothing, no one, ever, never. Which is like, is this confidential? Nothing, no one, never, dude. Like, yes, like everything, everything. It's nothing, no one, ever, never. You can never talk about what's going on. So I'm playing around with nothing, no one, never. I like that one.
Yeah. Nice. That one did a little something for me. I like that.
Yeah. Did it get you going?
It got me going a little bit.
What are some other interesting ones? I, there's not like that many that are intriguing to me, to be honest, but I'm trying to figure out like how to do it. It's really hard. Just creating that shift from scratch, it's way harder than it looks. Or I'm just not talented. But like, are there any good ones that you like?
You know, the one thing I heard about like on the value side that always stuck with me was a value is useless without acknowledging the trade-off. So like, you know, most companies, when they do their kind of like values, they'll be like respect, honor, integrity.
Which is stupid because, like, what's the opposite?
It's that, of course. Yeah, like, you said nothing that's of interest. You've acknowledged no, like, sacrifice in that. And it's just generic. And so it's not memorable. It's not memorable. It's not useful because it's, like, it's just an of course type of statement. Whereas, you know, Facebook did one that stuck, which was move fast and break things.
It's beautiful.
And move fast and break things was so good. And the reason why was because it acknowledged the downside of moving fast, that sometimes you're going to break shit. And like they said, yeah, yes, we take that. We'll err on the side of that. We will take that trade-off. And so I think that values are only useful when you acknowledge, when you bake into it, the opinionated trade-off, right? Like the fact that, yep, there are pros and cons to this. And our opinion is that this is the pro that matters, right? And that we're down, we will live with this downside because that's what shows you what you value. Like, for example, if you're somebody who's really high integrity, you're gonna, let's say there's, you know, an opportunity to take, you're gonna not take, you're gonna have to sacrifice things that could go your way because your high integrity. This is like Michelle Obama had one that kind of was stuck.
Yes, it's gotta be like painfully truthful.
Painfully true, exactly. So she did the when they go low, we go high, which is like kind of acknowledges that like you all, they go low, it hurts. You want to hit them back, but no, we go high, right? When they go low, we go high. That's another example of one that's like, I don't know when she said that, but that's like more than 5 years ago. I still remember that. A lot of people repeated that, kind of like to make fun of her, but because politics, people make fun of everything. But like, I do think there was something in that that was like more real than just like, we stand for respect. It's like, okay, cool. Doesn't mean anything to anybody when you say that. It's like, we're all numb to those sorts of things. Like Subway, eat fresh. And we print grill marks onto our chicken because it's not really grilled. Like, you know, it's like, all right, well, that's what they should really say. It's like, looks fresh, but it ain't.
You know, like, my high school had a great one that I've always remembered. It was we were an all boys school and it was Men for Others. And they just did such a good job of like nailing that into our brains. Just, right, you got to be a man for others. It was like,
that could be a dating app too.
Yeah, that, you're right. So I remember Meant for Others. I like that, but it's been really challenging. So I guess I got to go find some more phrases. I gotta make that better. Do you have any that you use for any of your companies? None of your what was Milk Roads? Did Milk Road have one?
No, but
I don't think you need one at the beginning, by the way.
At the beginning, I don't think you need one. I think you do need certain North Stars. Like, you know, sure. When you started the hustle, you were like...
We call it bullshit-free news.
Yeah, you were like, this is like your no-nonsense or no bullshit. Your smart friend telling you what happened in a no-bullshit way. That was a really good, like, North Star guiding principle that you could just say, okay, cool. So, like, we stole a version of that for the Milk Road. Because what ended up happening, here's like a tactical way that started to drift. The top story in all the news things would have been about like some arbitrary bullshit, like some, maybe it was like a regulatory thing, or maybe it was like a kind of like a boring regulatory thing, or it was like some layer two blockchain on like some layer two protocol on top of some like obscure blockchain did this thing. And we would write about it and I would read it. Because at this point, I was like the editor. I really never was the writer for Milk Road. But I would read it and I would just call Ben and I'd be like, dude, what? Like, are you interested in this? He's like, well, not really. But I mean, it seemed to be like, I mean, it's a top story. It's by other news outlets. I was like, cool. But like, if you weren't into it, like, I was like, here's the test. Text me about this? Like, would you text me and tell me about this? And would I be interested? This is already baked into, you wouldn't even text me if you didn't know. You would only text me if you knew I'd be interested. So I was like, let's just use that as the test. Like the litmus test is basically, would you text me about this thing that happened? If I was like, yo, what's new in crypto right now? Like, if that's not the thing, then don't put it in the newsletter, even if other people are writing about it. And when we made that shift, all of the like metrics kind of went up because people just naturally would resonate with that better because we had like a guiding principle for what goes in and what goes out. And I think that's the other thing that's really useful is it's really easy to talk about what goes in. What's important is to say what goes out. And I do this with like strategy planning documents too. Like if I wrote up a strategy for our e-com business. I think everybody should do something like this, by the way. I wrote it down and I wrote, here's the six bets that we have made this year. We're making this year. And I write them down first. So for example, I wrote the things called big bets and I shared this document with everyone. I said, big bet number one was... we didn't have anybody in like demand planning or inventory forecasting. I was like, it's pretty stupid that we don't have anybody doing this. Because of that, I think we have a ton of waste and sometimes we're way under on products that people want. Sometimes we're way over and it just sits there and just ties up our cash. I think that if we hire somebody who's got experience doing this, we will get 20-30% improvement on the bottom line, literally just from that one hire. That's bet number one. And then we hire that person. Now we're seeing how it plays out. Bet number two was like,
that's smart.
Let's say like whatever, without giving too much away, let me say, this type of partnership. We're trying to go for this type of partnership with this other big entity. We believe that if we do that, it's going to have this effect. That's the bet we're making. We'll know if it's successful if X happens. I just wrote this down. And so the whole company strategy for the year is one page long, and it's just six like sentences. It's like, here's the situation. Here's the bet. Here's the situation. Here's the bet. And I just wrote that out. And then with that at the bottom, I wrote, and here's the bets we are not making that we otherwise reasonably could have. So for example, we're not launching on Amazon because even though that would clearly add to the bottom line, but if we're launching on Amazon, that's going to take resources away. And see those other six bets? That's going to take all of our attention this year. So we're saying no to that. We're saying no to this other thing. We're saying no to this other thing, all of which were totally reasonable. You could make a case for, but we decided not to do them because we don't want to spread ourselves too thin. And it was actually that not doing section, like the first part was useful, but the second part was even more useful. And I think that people should highlight those, like, you know, it's not, focus is not what you say yes to. Focus is the 100 good ideas you say no to. And so I think when you take that principle and you apply it, that's where you find the interesting stuff, like whether it's in your company marketing or whatever.
What are you calling that? An e-commerce playbook?
Oh, I just like the bets, like big bets, the bets. Is what I called it. Like, what are the big That's bets good. That we're making this year? And we'll see. And I also wrote at the top, like, we don't think that all of these are going to pan out the way we expect. And I wrote one or two are going to either fail or we won't even execute on, because one or two winners will suck up a bunch of our energy. I expect that to happen. I expect the middle four to work, maybe, you know, plus or minus 20% on how well we think they should work. So like some will slightly underperform our expectations, some will slightly overperform. One or two of the six bets will either fail completely or we won't execute well enough because our attention got sucked away by the other ones. And one or two should have a huge payoff. That's the distribution. If they all just work as expected, we didn't really bet wildly enough, right? It's like kind of like the goals thing. Like, you don't want to hit 100% of your goals. You want to hit maybe like 70% of your goals. That shows that you stretched far enough without overstretching. All right, we're out of here. Sam, hit them with the line.
That is the pod.
Yeah. I feel like I can rule the world. I know I could be what I want to. I put my all in it like no days off. On the road, let's travel, never looking back.
All right, this episode is brought to you by Mercury. They are the finance platform of choice for over 200,000 companies. Shouldn't be surprised, because I use it myself for not one, not two, but I have eight different Mercury accounts. So I have seven for different companies that I'm a part of, and then I have my own personal account, because now they have personal banking, which is a really cool feature. I highly, highly recommend it. Like I said, I use it myself. And the reason why is because the way that Mercury works is beautiful. It's very intuitive. And you could tell that it's actually made by a startup founder. It's an entrepreneur. You could tell it's made by somebody who used other banking products in the past and didn't like all the different rough edges and annoyances and decided to, you know, actually fix it himself. And really, any type of entrepreneur you are, let's say you're an agency, well, one of the things every agency has to do is be able to send invoices, easily create them, send them to customers, and stay current on your balances with all your customers. Well, you can do that inside Mercury. And so I think that Mercury is great. Highly recommend you check it out. And thank you for sponsoring the show.
For more information, check out mercury.com. Mercury is a financial technology company, not a bank. Check show notes for details.